This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. John Gotti has been described by law enforcement authorities as the nation's top mafia boss. He's the reputed head of the Gambino family, the richest and most powerful mafia group in the U.S. The FBI estimates that the 49-year-old Gotti oversees narcotics, loan sharking, gambling, and labor rackets that take in over $100 million a year. Gotti is the subject of a new book by Ernest Volkman and John Cummings, two former Newsday investigative reporters who have written extensively about organized crime. Ernest Volkman is my guest. John Gotti has developed a reputation for legal invincibility. He was acquitted on criminal charges three times in the last 4 years. The latest was in February in a highly publicized New York trial. Gotti was found innocent of ordering the 1986 shooting and wounding of a Carpenters Union official named John O'Connor. But there are rumors that Gotti will soon be indicted for complicity in the 1985 murder of Paul Castellano, the former head of the Gambino family who Gotti replaced. Speculation is that prosecutors will use the Racketeer-Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, or RICO. RICO has been used to successfully prosecute many crime organizations. Volkman predicts that Gotti's legal invincibility is about to end.
Sometime in the not-too-distant future, John Gotti is going to be hit with a RICO case the likes of which you have never seen. And it's a RICO case he will not beat. And it's a RICO case that will be primarily put together by the FBI. That is the one agency that has not yet prosecuted him.
Do you have inside information on that, or are you just speculating?
I have inside information, and I'm personally guaranteeing you that Mr. Gotti will be convicted and go to jail.
Do you think that mafia defense lawyers have developed new, very effective techniques in recent years?
No, interestingly enough, mafia defense lawyers are pretty much a throwback to the 30s. They are loud. They are flamboyant. They hit below the belt. They pull every trick they can. And the reason for that is that's the way their clients want it. It's very interesting that mafia defendants prefer a particular style in defense lawyers. They like a lot of screaming. They like a lot of yelling. They like a lot of jumping up and down, like you see in the movies. In the real world, of course, as everybody knows, the more effective lawyers are the ones who are very quiet and the ones who impress juries with very detailed cross-examinations that tear a prosecution case to shreds. But not mafia defendants. These are guys who are not into legal subtleties of any kind, and they like lawyers who look like something out of a grade B movie.
What are the legal concerns you have as the author of this new book, Gumbada? After all, Gotti has been acquitted three times in 4 years, and in your book you're making all kinds of charges of things that he's been guilty of. He's never admitted to being the head of a crime family even, and certainly it hasn't been proven in court yet. So what do you have to do to protect yourself when you write a book like this? To protect yourself from lawsuits, but also to protect yourself from assault by people who you're writing about.
Terry, it would make my day if John Gotti would sue me for libel. I would love it if he would sue me, because we would immediately cite truth as a defense, and I would be extremely happy, believe me, to have John Gotti sitting across from me in a lawyer's office, forced to answer a lot of questions about his criminal career.
But are you saying you don't think that would happen?
Let's put it this way. I have never known a mafia person of any rank to sue for libel. They don't give interviews. They don't sue for libel. And they tend really not to read too many books anyway.
Do you worry about personal injury?
No, I've been in this business for a long time, Terry, and one of the first lessons you learn when you get into it is that you can't have it both ways. If you're going to write about the underworld and organized crime and people who have killed other people for a living, part of the price is that sometimes they may not like what you write and they may possibly come after you. That comes with the territory.
My guest is Ernest Volkman, co-author of the new book, Gumbada, which is the story of John Gotti. You describe Gotti as a hero to the new generation of mobsters, mob yuppies. Just describe what you mean by mob yuppies.
One of the striking things to me about the current mafia is that, like many other American institutions, it's becoming yuppified. We have a whole new generation of young mafia punks now coming into leadership positions, particularly since the old generation has been badly decimated by a federal crackdown. And these new guys coming into positions of power, they are not the old godfathers that you and I remember from the movies. These are materialists. They look like college graduates, most of them, which a considerable portion of them are. They look like your average yuppie on the street. And these are guys who are totally and completely into materialism.
Well, hasn't the mob always been into materialism?
Yes, but they always were very careful to conceal it. Let's take, for example, probably the greatest godfather the mafia ever produced, Carlo Gambino. Carlo Gambino, for 40 years, was the most powerful organized crime leader in the entire world, and yet you'd never know it. I don't think that Carlo Gambino ever spent more than $30 on an outfit in his life. He looked like an old Italian street sweeper. He had an old battered hat, he had old clothes, he had a very modest house, and he had an even more modest summer house. Officially, he was a real estate salesman for 40 years. Yet he was, as they used to call him, capo di tutti capi, boss of all bosses, a man who, with the flick of his finger, could get you killed, a man who earned an estimated $300 million a year. Yet Carlo Gambino was the kind of guy who said, look, you've got to have a low profile. Provided you keep a low profile and you don't get involved in narcotics and you don't shoot cops and you don't shoot innocent citizens on the street, basically the United States of America will adopt a laissez-faire attitude towards you. They will let you get away with organized crime. Just don't get crazy about it.
What are the differences in operation style between the new mafia and the old mafia?
Well, John Gotti, I think, is the ultimate personification of the new mafia. First of all, he's flashy. He takes great pride in being seen. He's very concerned about his public appearance. He wears $1,800 suits. He thumbs his nose at the law enforcement establishment. And he walks around with an air of, look, I'm the godfather. Try and get me, na, 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 na. That's how John Gotti walks around. That's a very sharp contrast from the old days.
Now, you say that Gotti became crime boss of the Gambino family after engineering the murder of the Gambino family boss, Paul Castellano.
Yes.
Why did he do that?
Paul Castellano was in the way, number one. And number two, Paul Castellano had become extremely upset about one of the young punks under him by name of John Gotti. And Paul Castellano became convinced it was only a matter of time before John Gotti, an extremely ambitious hood, would attempt to take over the post of boss. And so shortly before his death, Castellano had begun making a series of moves designed to clip John Gotti's wings. John Gotti, in turn, became convinced that it was only a matter of time that Castellano would have him eliminated. So therefore, to him, it came down to a question of kill or be killed.
And there must be a lot of unique problems in murdering a crime boss.
Yes. I mean, the first problem you have in murdering a crime boss is that it causes a lot of unrest throughout the rest of the mafia. There is a very firm mafia rule which says you cannot raise hands against a fellow made member. That means anything from slapping him in the face to killing him. That is an absolute no-no. Killing a family boss is a very, very serious step. Almost always, you have to go to what's called a commission. That is an kind of ruling body for the entire 24 families of the American mafia. And you must get at least tacit approval from them to carry out a killing. To get that approval, you better have a very, very good reason. You have to say, well, look, this guy is not taking care of his people. This man is stealing money. This man is doing this or that and the other thing. And therefore, logic dictates that this man must be eliminated.
Has Gotti stood trial for the murder of Castellano?
Nobody will, very shortly.
This is what you were referring to before?
Yes. So that one of the charges that John Gotti will face will be arranging the murder of Paul Castellano.
Now, Paul Castellano had issued an edict against narcotics trafficking, and Gotti thought that that was aimed at him?
Well, first of all, it's very important to understand that Paul Castellano was one of the largest narcotics traffickers in the United States. Now, that sounds rather odd that a man who was a narcotics trafficker of Castellano's dimension would then issue an edict barring narcotics trafficking by members of his own family. Let me quickly explain how this came about. The mafia some years ago decided that the problem was that they had to work through cutouts, that it was too dangerous to get directly involved in the narcotics trade, which trade, by the way, the mafia has dominated for at least the past 70 years, and that continues to this day. So what they came up with was a very simple organizational plan. Big narcotics deals would be handled by a series of cutouts who, if necessary, would take the fall, meaning that they would take the conviction in the event they were caught. Anyone else in the family who dealt in narcotics was subject to an immediate death penalty. And the reason for that was quite practical. There was no moral issue here at all, as far as the mafia was concerned. Narcotics charges in this country are very, very serious, and judges tend to hit people convicted of handling drugs with very heavy sentences. In the federal courts, you can see sentences ranging from 47 years up to 120 years. What does that mean? Well, it means that a mafia soldier, a mafia captain, anybody in the mafia who gets caught dealing in narcotics is subject to extremely heavy pressure by law enforcement people who can say, look, you're facing life in prison. If you're 40 years old and you just got an 80-year sentence, you're going to die in prison. That makes them very vulnerable to making a deal. Keep in mind that Joe Valachi, probably the most famous mafia informant in this century, his road to perdition, to use the mafia's phrase, began when he was arrested for heroin trafficking.
So Paul Castellano had this edict to keep the rest of the people from his crime family out of narcotics so that he'd have a monopoly on it and so that they couldn't get him into trouble. Paul Castellano was knocked off. The head of the family now is John Gotti. You've called him the largest narcotics trafficker in the country.
No, I've said one of the largest.
One of the largest.
Right.
What's his technique?
John Gotti, from the first moment that he became a rising power in the mafia, decided that he was going to get involved in narcotics. John Gotti and his brother, I should point out, is currently serving 50 years in federal prison for narcotics trafficking. John Gotti and his brother and a number of his close friends decided that they would evade or attempt to evade Castellano's and indeed the mafia's ban on dealing in narcotics by members of the mafia. That was the one way they could make a tremendous amount of money in one fell swoop. And indeed, the people involved in John Gotti's little ring had so much money that they were carrying around cash and shopping bags at one point.
Are Gotti's techniques of drug trafficking any different than the Castellano techniques were?
Yes. Paul Castellano, like other mafia godfathers, was extremely careful. Take, for example, Carlo Gambino, who originally set up this whole operation. Carlo Gambino used as a cutout a baker living in the Bronx who lived in a very modest little home. He was the man who, however, was making monthly trips to Sicily and handling somewhere around $50 million a year worth of heroin transactions. When the federal agents finally tumbled to him, they dug up his yard and they found $9 million in cash buried in his backyard. Paul Castellano used the owner of a chain of grocery stores to run his heroin operations. Now, Gotti, by contrast, was quite open about it. One of the reasons why Paul Castellano began to get a little dicey was that he began hearing reports that John Gotti was not only dealing in narcotics, but he was doing it openly, and he was directly involved. This was an absolute no-no. Part of the change in style that John Gotti has brought to the so-called new mafia is an open acknowledgement for the first time. He has made it very clear to everybody that the old days are over, and if you want to deal in dope, you go right ahead and deal in dope, provided, of course, you give him a good portion of the profits.
That leaves him more vulnerable, though, doesn't it?
It does. You're absolutely right. There are a lot of people in the mafia who think this is a serious strategic error, that it is only a matter of time before Gotti gets nailed on a narcotics case. They point out that Gene Gotti and three of John Gotti's closest friends were recently convicted in a major heroin operation, and it was only through luck that the federal agents were not able to bring John Gotti into that case.
I was under the understanding that the mafia has become less important in narcotics trafficking in the United States because so much of the mafia has been busted up and put behind bars on RICO trials. You're saying that's not true?
It's only partially true. It depends on what kind of narcotics you want. Let us say, for example, you're interested in heroin. Now, there's many kinds of heroin. You can get China White, which is the kind of heroin that comes in from Southeast Asia. You can get so-called Mexican Brown, which is a much inferior form that comes up from South America and is smuggled in through Mexico. Or you can get what is called the Dope World's Tiffany of Junk, and that's Sicilian heroin. Now, if you really want good heroin, you want Sicilian heroin. And there's only one organization in the world that controls that traffic, and that's the mafia. Similarly, if you want certain kinds of very high-grade narcotics, it is only the mafia that has access to that.
Ernest Volkman is my guest, and he's written extensively about organized crime in the United States, and his new book, Gumbada, is the story of John Gotti, who's the head of one of the New York crime families. What would you say the Gambino crime family's innovations, so to speak, have been within organized crime?
The chief contribution they've made, and it's one that as a society we've had to bear the burden of, is its infiltration into the legitimate side of the economy. Carlo Gambino, the founding progenitor of that family, was the guy who understood that organized crime, while most of us decry it, also has a lot of law-abiding citizens who like to do business with it. Whether you want to buy pornography, whether you want to gamble illegally, whether you want to get some drugs, whether you want to buy some hot goods and save a few dollars, whether you want to get a car at a very steep discount, and a million and other services, organized crime can provide them for you, provided you're willing to pay the price. And that is where the Gambino family, which is the single most powerful criminal organization in the United States, that is where they made their big breakthrough. And as a result, now you've got a wide range of businesses in this country in which the Gambino family plays a very, very key role. In New York, where the concrete industry has been badly infiltrated, particularly by the Gambino family, the costs of dealing with the mob are passed on to the consumers. The same is true in the garbage business, and most particularly true, unfortunately, in the restaurant business. If you go into a lot of restaurants, particularly in New York, you'll be struck by very, very high prices. Only part of that is related to the actual management of the restaurant. There is a special mafia tax you pay because that restaurant in some way is dealing with the mob. Not necessarily that three guys in shark skin suits come in with guns, smack the head chef in the face and say, look, give me $10. It doesn't work that way anymore. What the Gambino family has pioneered is that particular restaurant, almost certainly what they've done is take over the subsidiary services of the restaurant. In other words, the linen supply company to that restaurant, the service that provides the silverware, the service that provides the cleaning of the restaurant, and a dozen other services, those they control, and that's where they make their money.
Ernest Volkman is my guest. He's a reporter who has written extensively on organized crime, and his new book is about John Gotti. It's called Gumbada. I want to ask you a little bit about how you did the research for this book.
And Very carefully.
Yeah, well, you know, in your introduction you say that you spoke to people on both sides of the law.
Yes.
And that almost all of the people contributing to your reporting would prefer not to be named publicly.
Yes.
So, I mean, how do you make the kinds of contacts on the other side of the law that you need to get the information to write a book like this?
with great difficulty. Again, this comes with the territory. At this stage, my partner and I, John Cummings, who shared with me the task of putting the book together, I think to date we have spent more time in prison than most felons in the state of New York. And I'm convinced that if he or I were ever convicted of a crime in the near future, we could probably argue successfully for time already served. A lot of people that we wanted to talk to, regrettably, were enjoying at that time the hospitality of either the state of New York correctional system or the federal government's much heralded correction system. Going to jail is endemic to people in the mafia. It comes with the territory. They accept it. And the chances usually are good that if you're going to talk to somebody in the mafia, of course, you're not going to quote them by name if you can avoid it, since that might cause them health difficulties. The odds are good that you're going to meet them in prison. A lot of these people you get to know after a while. They operate in a world where there aren't many written contracts and court suits and things like that. And they tend to rely on reputation and a person's word. If someone understands that you are straight, that is to say that you are exactly who you say you are and you do exactly what you say you will do, they will talk to you after a while, particularly if they have a motive for talking.
So you're predicting that John Gotti is going to be back on trial real soon in a big case that will be his ultimate downfall.
I'm not predicting it. I'm stating as a fact.
Okay. You plan on uncovering that as well, sticking with the story?
I wouldn't miss it for the world.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you very much for talking with us about organized crime. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry. Nice to talk to you again.
Ernest Volkman's new book is called Gumbada, The Improbable Rise and Fall of John Gotti and His Gang. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.